I am fantasy and paranormal romance author Leslie Penelope, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Sunday, April 24th, 2024, and this is episode 237 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. And this episode is live. It is my first ever live episode. I decided to do a live episode just so I would not be able to edit, or I won't be able to edit. And a lot of what has kept me from podcasting, I haven't done it in a minute, has been just, I haven't had time and I don't actually have time today, which is why I'm recording the podcast live for the first time ever. It is extremely noisy in my apartment and it was quiet up until like 5 minutes ago. And so I apologize for the noise. Just a quick aside, there is a small child who lives upstairs. I guess he comes over every other weekend, and his favorite activity is running back and forth, as loud, like stomping his feet. I think he's 3 or 4. And he's doing that now, and he wasn't doing that 15 minutes ago. But I'm pushing forward, and hopefully the audio quality won't be too bad. I'm going to run it through my processor. And yes, but if I didn't record it live right now, I just wouldn't do it at all. And it's been weeks and weeks. I wanted to get an episode out last week from when I got back from Greece for my birthday. So this is what we're doing here. And just as a reminder, you can sign up for the Footnotes newsletter, which includes show notes for each episode, as well as inspiration, strategies, and ideas to help you grow as a writer and as a creative. That is at myimaginaryfriends.net/footnotes. When you sign up, you can choose to become an imaginary best friend for a few dollars per month and get access to the premium posts, which are long-form craft essays, as well as discounts on my courses. Please join me there. Anyone in the comments, welcome. Yeah, very unusual live episode. Hi, Lisa. But I had a lot that I wanted to say and share with everybody. And so that is what's happening here. This week's best thing. There's been so much. It's been a month since my last personal episode of the podcast. But I realized I also forgot to celebrate the 5-year anniversary. I started this, I believe, in March 2019. I did not actually go back and check the actual date, but it's been 5 years of My Imaginary Friends. And yeah, I just wanted to acknowledge that, celebrate that a little bit. And I'm sure I've come a long way. Someone asked me recently, do I go back and listen to old episodes? I do sometimes, especially when someone comments on them. So there are people who start at the beginning and then just binge all of these years of podcasts, which is very scary to me because I do not know what I was talking about 5 years ago. I'm sure I contradict myself. I have a terrible memory. I do the best I can. But if someone happens to comment on an old episode, sometimes I'll like listen to it again. Like, what was I saying? Especially if they're like responding to a question that I had 3 years ago. I don't know what I was saying. But yeah, thank you for the congratulations. It's been a journey. My personal update. So this week's best thing is many things. This month's best thing, I guess I should say. Let's go back to where we last left off. I was in Greece at the very beginning of the month. I was there for technically 9 days, but like 2 travel days. So effectively a week in Greece. And it was amazing. I had a wonderful, amazing, beautiful, glorious time. I was kind of scared. I'd never done any sort of international travel. That's not true. On my own, I was going to say, but the only other European travel that I've ever done was in college when I went to France for the Cannes Film Festival in 1998. I traveled alone-ish. I mean, I had another student who was with me that I knew from Howard University. So we went together and we were working at the Cannes Film Festival as film students. Amazing experience. Since then, I have not been to Europe. I've been to New Zealand, and that's the only other place out of the country I think I've been. I don't know if I've even been to Canada. So Greece was fantastic. I had a beautiful time. I have pictures on Instagram. I will add a link to them in the show notes when this is over. You can see my flying dress photos, which I talk about in the Instagram post, which was not actually the initial plan. But yeah, we did the Acropolis, Parthenon, all of that on one day. There were some bus tours. We went to Athens, Crete, and Santorini. And, I did it was a tour for solo travelers with the company EF Tours, and I actually recommend them. Several of the people who were on that trip had been on several tours with that company, whether they were tours for solo travelers. So you get to meet people, you have your own room, and it's not as expensive as often with these tour companies if you don't want to share a room. you get charged a lot of extra money, and it seemed like a fairly reasonable price to have your own room every night. And so, yeah, I would recommend it. I'm already trying to figure out where can I go next year? Like, where's my next trip? I think I really want to go to Peru. I want to do Machu Picchu. So maybe I'll do like a April, you know, April being my birthday month. It's a good month to travel often, hopefully. It was a good month to go to Greece. It was early in the season, so it wasn't too crowded. And, you know, because the summer months apparently are very insane. The weather was beautiful. It was a little bit unusually warm. I think it's usually colder and windier in at that time of year in Greece, but we had beautiful weather every single day, like 75 degrees and sunny. Just had the most amazing time. And yeah, welcome, Shay. I think that it was studying abroad there must have been amazing. I didn't get to study abroad anywhere. I was too scared, as you know. I went to college when I was 17, so I had no desire to study abroad. I was very like scared of international travel until I went to France, and which is, was a great experience, as I had mentioned. But anyway, so that was Greece. That's my quick rundown. I do want to do a longer video, just probably not a podcast, but a video, because I was recording sort of video diaries as I was there, and I have a lot more pictures. I only put a tiny handful on Instagram, and I want to put together some kind of like video just for me to remember the trip better, and I'll probably share it. So whenever I get the time to do that, like in my copious amounts of free time, that is what I hope to do. April is my birthday month, so my birthday was the 18th, and that was fun. Also, I didn't think I was going to do anything because I had just gotten back. I guess I got back from Greece like on the 10th or 11th. Yeah, so it was the week before. But Benihana is one of my favorite places to go on my birthday. Ever since I was a kid, I went to Benihana on my birthday because they used to give you a little Polaroid. Now it's much more organized, I guess. They still give you a photo, and it's very fast, but they print it on the printer. So I have years of collections of Benihana photos. I did think I did my 35th birthday there. I invited a bunch of friends. And so just two of my friends took me out to Benihana, which was very nice because otherwise I would have just stayed home and cocooned in my apartment. And then yesterday I got back from a PolyCon, which is the third year I've done a PolyCon. It is a very large reader event. I think it's like 1,500 readers, 300 authors. Very exhausting. Thank you for the belated birthday wishes. Yeah. And so a PolyCon it was always a great experience. I always love going to meet readers and to sign books. You know, I had my little table set up. I don't have the elaborate table setups that a lot of authors do, but I'm thinking like, should I get a banner? Should I do more? I don't know if it really matters. If it's fun for me, I'll do it. I've been thinking I want to design more stuff. Again, copious amounts of free time I do not have. But PolyCon was a bit different this year. It was a little disappointing in terms of just the amount of books sold or the amount of, it seemed like it was fewer people I interacted with in general. I loved everyone I did meet who came up to the table, even if they just took a bookmark or whatever. But I already had decided not to go next year because these events, you know, as authors, we pay for the table, we buy books. If you travel, you have to ship them. I've only done local events, and it changed hotels this year, which is a lot more expensive. So just looking at like, what is the goal of a reader event? The goal of a reader event obviously is to meet readers, hopefully meet the readers that you have, hopefully try to get some new readers. And that is still really valuable. And I have to think about just goals and budget and how to do that in a way that makes sense, that is sustainable, and that's still fun for me. And even though big events like this really drain my energy, they also give me energy. Like, I was so exhausted last night. I drove home at like 10 p.m. Because it's local to me. This year was in National Harbor in Maryland, which is 45 minutes to 90 minutes away, depending on the traffic. But yeah, driving home last night, super exhausted. But then today I woke up with tons and tons of energy, which I don't know I'm in this vortex of exhaustion when you have that burst of energy, but you're still super tired. Reading the comments, Shay with the hobbies. You didn't go to Howard because you were too scared at 17. Why were you scared of Howard? Howard is great. I mean, I had very mixed experiences. I ended up loving Howard, but yeah, I don't know. Howard is close to home. Could I have gone super far away from home at that age? That is a question that I have. I went very far for grad school, or very far for me. I went to California for graduate school. I was thinking, one of the few graduate schools that I was looking at was actually in Australia. And I was like, I want to go very, very far away since I stayed so close to home for undergraduate. But Australia was out of reach for many reasons. And I actually really loved going to graduate school in California. So reader events, I'm looking, I want to do more, probably more local ones. I would travel for them, but I just have to see, like, okay, if you're making money in other areas that cover the loss that you take when you travel for a reader event, especially when you have to ship books, fly places, stay at hotels, all that stuff. It is a value proposition. Like, there's advertising costs that you don't know exactly when you're going to get them back, in terms of, you know, there's a lot of things that you do that you don't earn your money back right away, but you do them because of the long tail. So meeting readers, if I sell a new reader a book, they can maybe read all that series, read all the other series, and become perhaps a fan for life. So those things, and then they've met me and they have this personal connection. Recording this live is funny because there's all of these things that I would probably normally cut out, like a little boy running wind sprints upstairs and the cat making, I don't know if you can hear that or not, but anyway, moving across the country, yes, that would be a scary thing to do. If that's why I didn't do it for undergrad, so I totally understand. I have another reader event coming up in June. It is the Imaginarium Book Festival. I don't like advertise them a lot because they are already sold out. These things sell out very quickly. But I did want to, I think I mentioned in a comment on a post yesterday, I am thinking about trying to travel more to meet more readers. So if there is a reader event near you that you go to or would go to and would like to see me there, please let me know, comment, email me, hello@lpenelope.com, and I will consider it, because I think that I do so many local events, especially if it's in LA and I can stay with my brother. Like, that's always an option. If there's a person that I am friends with that I can stay with, that makes it easier. But they're very enjoyable, but it's like there's so many things that you have to think about when doing them. All right, so writing update. I'll start with my nonfiction and then we'll get into fiction. There was a post last week called, I think it's called No One Buys Books, that went viral. It's called No One Buys Books. It was on Substack, went totally viral. And I read it and I was just like, what? It was basically this woman who's a very popular Substacker, very successful Substacker, who released, like, serializes her novels on Substack, and also talks about utopian societies a lot. But she had read the book that was based on the trial of Penguin Random House versus the Department of Justice, when Simon & Schuster was going to buy Penguin Random House and the DOJ stepped in saying it was a monopoly and it ended up not going through. So all of these publishing facts came out during that trial because the CEOs of the Big Five were on the stand, and it was a big brouhaha when it came up, like, publishing was glued to, I guess Twitter was still Twitter back then. And a lot of information came out that some people didn't know about how publishing works. So this woman kind of summarized that, did a lot of quotes, and came to some conclusions that were, quite frankly, very strange. And I read her post and I was like, this cannot stand. I was like, I must write a response, which is a very rare response for me. Yeah, it went totally viral. And so I was like, I'm going to write a response on Substack. And Russell Nolte, who I had met last year, who is another big Substacker, he runs the Author Stack. He also does a million other things. He accepts guest posts. And he had asked me, like, do you want to do a guest post? We'd love to have you. I had not been able to think of what I would guest post about. And I was like, I'm going to ask Russell, like, I'm going to do a response to this. And he was like, yes, please do it. So in my writing time, which is the mornings, because I had finished the proposal for Book of Secrets, which I will talk about next, I was supposed to be working on the short story that is due next month. But I took 2 days of my writing time to write this essay because it takes me that long. So it was like probably 3 or 4 hours I spent on it. But I was fired up and I had things to say. So that is on the author stack. If you are watching live, I will update the show notes when I'm done with links because I don't have any links. But it's called Beyond Bestsellers. Yes, People Still Buy Books. That is the name of my post. And I was just recapping my sort of my journey as a traditionally published author or as a hybrid author, because I started indie and went traditional, and my experiences in traditional publishing. So the subtitle of that post is Why I Still Believe in Publishing Despite Its Flaws. And so far, it's gotten a good response. I really, you know, why does it take me 5 hours to write like a 1900 word essay? That's a good question. That's why I don't write more of them. That's why my Substack is not all essays, because that would be all I would ever do in life. One of my top five strengths is being deliberative. And that just means it takes me a long time to do things because I think about them a lot and it has to be like the way I want it to be. And it was important to me that I was clear and that I was responding to her in a way that I didn't feel like it was necessary to try to like take her down or call her, say mean things or anything. Like, she has a perspective. I really disagree. So did many, many other people who have experienced traditional publishing. And, you know, so that is what I did. I felt good about that. I got it out of my system. And then I went back to my short story, which is, I'm jumping around, I apologize, but the short story I'm working on is going to come out in an anthology, I guess next year, is a gender-swapped Cinderella. I'm going to try to make that work. I did the gender-swapped Red Riding Hood last year or the year before. When was that anthology? And now I'm thinking, I'm just going to do a bunch of short stories that are gender-swapped fairy tales and eventually put them in a collection and see what happens. So that will be the next thing I'm working on in between the other things that I'm talking about now. So if you have been a podcast listener for a while, or at least this year, you might be familiar that I am writing a proposal for my option from a publisher, which is a book I'm calling The Book of Secrets for now. And I did the first few chapters as a proposal. So the proposal is a synopsis and the first few chapters. I think I did 6 chapters. It's about 13,000 words, maybe. I was originally going to do the first act, but I ended before the first act at a really good cliffhanger. And I sent it to my agent on Monday of last week, and he read it this week. And while I was at a PolyCon, I get this email like, oh, can we talk about this? And I'm like, I'm so exhausted, but I don't want to wait until next week to hear what he has to say. So we had a call. Was it last night? Was it Friday night? I don't know. Might have been Friday night. He really likes the chapters. He had some changes that he like wanted to see. And so my new agent is a very experienced editor. He pushes me in a way that is very, very good. I really appreciate it because we're having this Zoom. And he, you know, he says he really likes it. Then he sandwiches the feedback, gives me the notes. And I'm like, you didn't love every moment of that? You didn't think every page was absolute genius? Because that's the response you want. And when you send it away, obviously you want everyone to say, this is no notes, absolute genius in every line. And he never says that because it's never true, right? I really loved it. I loved what I did. But we talked and I actually agreed with what he said. Like, at first it hit like, no, this is great. And then I was like asking questions and I'm like, oh, you're right. And I asked more questions and I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. Nothing really happens in that chapter. Like, it's good writing, I think, but nothing happens. So really it's not a lot of work that I have to do before I get it ready to push out into the world. I think I can finish it up this week and then get back to the short story. And that is the goal. Shay with the Hobbies asked, will you never indie publish again? I definitely will indie publish again. I just don't know what or when. So at the moment in April 2024, I do not have anything planned for release in 2025. I don't have any, you know, I'm not in contract right now. Even if I sell a book this year, it wouldn't come out till 2026 at the earliest with traditional publishing, which means I probably will have an indie release next year. It's just, what will it be and when will I write it? So my Nano book from last year that I wrote is this cozy romanticy. I could indie publish it. I was thinking of sending it to my old editor who is now running Bramble, which is a romanticy imprint at Tor, but I haven't written it yet. I don't know what it's going to end up being. I have a lot of ideas. So yeah, I don't want to abandon indie publishing, but I am kind of focused on a couple of ideas that are traditionally published ideas. It would be difficult for me to indie publish the Book of Secrets one, which I want to be a duology, I think it would be a little bit of a harder sell indie. And then the next idea that I have is another, I don't know if it's even historical. It might be historical. It might not be, because I still don't know what that book is. But all of my romance ideas are seem very much fit for indie. So yeah, I'm kind of thinking that too. Like, what's the path? I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing yet. Okay. Other things I wanted to talk about. Oh, Clarion West. I am doing, I will be in Seattle in 2 weeks. On May, let me look it up. Getting up the calendar. May 10th is the T. So it's called Steamy in Seattle. It's me and Melissa Marr, who I was in an anthology with. And she was actually at a Polycon, I had no idea. And I did not see her because we were in different rooms. It's so big that if you don't, it's impossible to see all the authors who were actually there. But we will be doing a tea and on the 10th. And then the next day, Saturday, May 11th, I am teaching a half-day workshop on romanticy. A Writer's Guide to Romanticy is the name of it. And that should be really fun. So the tea is a charity event. They're going to be books, tea, other books, conversation. It's being streamed, and it's also live if you happen to be in the Seattle area. I have a bunch of other events. So after that, Gaithersburg Book Festival back in Maryland on Saturday, I will be at the Maryland Romance Writers tent, and then Imaginarium Book Festival in DC in June. I'm doing an event in Richmond at the end of June, and then my book comes out June 4th. So Daughter of the Merciful Deep, and I'm going to have to start promoting that more. I have energy right now. I feel like a crash is imminent. That is actually what always happens. And so I feel like I'm bubbling with too much energy that I'm probably burning it out. Okay, the other thing, I had an event last week in Pennsylvania, and so I was driving the 4 hours to mid-Pennsylvania. I don't know. It was like not far from Scranton, but not close to Scranton either. I was listening to audiobooks. So I listened to a thriller, and then I listened to an Audible original, which was, Plan Your Year Like a Millionaire. And my friend, Nikisha, had been pushing me to read We Should All Be Millionaires by Rachel Rogers, which I had never read. So after I listened to this 2-hour Audible original by her with like more action oriented, I am currently going back and listening to We Should All Be Millionaires, which is super inspiring. And I should have listened to it when she told me to, like a year ago, and I didn't. The event in Richmond, Lisa, is, I do have my calendar open here, and I think I did. So is it on my calendar, actually? Did I put it there? I did not. I have to update my website. Okay, hold on. Oh, maybe I did, and I'm looking at the wrong month. Can you tell that I was at a reader event and my brain turned to mush? It's called, oh no, I didn't put it on there. I don't know. It's June 29th. I will add it to my author calendar sometime soon. But it's Saturday, June 29th, and it is at a bookstore in Richmond with Zio Axelrod, who is another friend and a wonderful romance writer who I adore. So for the We Should All Be Millionaires, it's just a really inspiring book about just changing your mindset. That's what I'm getting from it so far. It's kind of like I have a certain mindset about a lot of things that is not always helpful. What is helpful is realizing that some of the advice in her book about foundational stuff, like how to set up your life and certain ways to think about things, I think I'm doing some of that. And so I feel like if I can monitor my thinking about things and some of my limiting thoughts and beliefs about things, then I could go further than I believe is possible. Happy Sunday. Welcome. Welcome to my live podcast. So one of the challenges in the Plan Your Year Like a Millionaire, which is like a 2-hour Audible original audiobook, if you are a member of Audible, I highly recommend it. If you are business-minded, entrepreneurial, or want to be business-minded and entrepreneurial, is a 10K in 10 days challenge where you challenge yourself to bring in $10,000 in 10 days. And if you have any sort of skills, any sort of knowledge, it sounds really hard, but it could be doable. And even if you don't make that goal, like take 10 days, see what you can do. So I came back to my mastermind and I was like, let's do this. All of us are going to do 10K and 10 day challenges. And everybody's like, yeah, let's do it. So I'm going to work in public and let you know a few of the things that I brainstormed that I want to do. This is probably going to be in like a month, like late May, so I can put things together in order to do this. So at some point at the end of May, I'm going to have this challenge. And if you kind of break it up into multiple things, that's the way. Stokely, you see? For those in audio only, my cat is climbing around on the bookshelf or the little shelf behind me, trying to knock down things. They're out of control. So if you break it up into like smaller pieces, then I think it is doable. Because I do a lot of things that could make this a reality. So one of the suggestions in the audiobook was like, oh, can you do a like whatever service you provide, do a thing in a day. And I was like, well, a small WordPress website will take me like 8 to 10 hours to build all told if everything is ready. And we're like a 5-page site, a 6 or 7-page site, maybe depending. So if I have a template ready, I'm customizing a template so it looks different, even though the bones are the same for everybody. I could build a WordPress website in a day. So, you know, figure out how much I would charge for that, offer like 2 or 3 of those for people who need new websites. Because the idea is, what my fear was, like, oh yeah, I could like pre-sell a bunch of stuff, but then if it takes me 2 weeks to do everything and I've pre-sold it, well, that's going to take me a few months. And then, yes, I might have made $10,000 in 10 days, but the next 3 months are spent fulfilling that. And so it's less money that you're making that you normally would have been making. So I'm trying to do things that are like time bound. That's not the word I'm thinking of, but like a unique instance of a thing that is I can do quickly or something I already have. So I might offer a couple WordPress websites in a day, do a sale on my course, and then actually actively acquire affiliates because I have this affiliate program. I built it, but I don't do anything with it. And I have a bunch of people in the course who, you know, if they've enjoyed it, they might want to tell others about it, become affiliates. They earn money. I, you know, expand the reach of my marketing and advertising. So do that. Maybe have a sale on the author coaching. So like sales are things that you can do that you're already doing, but obviously, hopefully you're earning a little bit more in a smaller period of time if you have like a flash sale. Another thing was to do a Shopify store. So a Shopify store, I'm a web developer. I can build them. I can't do it in a day. It's a longer period of time. But if you prepay for a Shopify store, like you're next in line, because I don't have any on the docket right now. And maybe offer one of those because those are always, you know, my minimum Shopify store is like $2,000 because it takes a lot to build them, but offer like a prepaid thing. And then we were talking in Mastermind about this and kind of sharing our brainstorms about things that we could offer. And at the end, last year, I'd had this sort of dream for this year to hold some kind of like in-person writing retreat, like an organized one, because I had gone to this retreat center that's in Maryland outside of Baltimore. It's so beautiful and peaceful and lovely. I did a personal retreat there, but I've done events there. And it's a conference center, so you can have groups of different sizes, from small, like 6 or 7 people, to like 150 people. And one of my like dreams was like, I would love to hold a retreat. I want to have my massage therapist come in and give massages. She also does yoga, like have yoga in the morning, writing time, do some workshops, like do some teaching, sharing, community building. So I'm going to try to put that together and maybe pre-sell that. So I'm excited about these ideas. Once again, I feel like I'm headed for an energy crash, but at the moment, these all seem like great ideas. And this is a thing that felt out of reach, and I probably wouldn't do it unless I was pushed. Like it was a dream that I was just like, oh, lofty, but it's not impossible for me to hold a writing retreat. Like there's already a place that's perfect. It's not exorbitantly expensive. It's just a matter of logistics and organization and figuring it out. So yeah, those are my initial plans right now. Obviously we know things change as I go along, and yeah, that is what's happening. Other things I wanted to talk about. I watched the movie 3,000 Years of Longing with Tilda Swinton and Idris Elba on the recommendation of a friend. And we were talking about the book that I'm writing, which does not have, I think we were talking about Jin. And I've been trying to get Jin into one of my books for years and years. It was supposed to be in the Angel books. They didn't show up because I didn't finish the books. And then there may or may not be Jin in this book. I don't think there are. Anyway, I watched that movie. What it did have that I had already put in Monsters We Defy was a story of King Solomon and the Queen of Sheba. And another kind of variation on that story, which I thought was very cool. A, the woman they had playing the Queen of Sheba is like the most beautiful woman I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, I don't know. She must be a model. I did not look her up. But yes, that is the Queen of Sheba. I think at one point, Idris Elba, who's the djinn character, is like, yes, she was beauty itself. And I'm like, yes, they found the right person to play that role. And so they do a version of Solomon and Queen of Sheba, which is the backstory of, I do a version of it in The Monsters We Defy. They take it in a different direction because I was watching it wondering, are they going to do what I did? Did they see what I did? They did not, but it's fine. Everyone has their own versions of it. I thought that was still pretty cool. The movie itself was really cool, like 75% of the way. And then it took a turn that I could not follow with the movie. I still recommend it because it's beautiful. And I talk about this more on the Ink and Magic podcast. That's going to come out in a couple weeks. I don't know. Maybe it's next week. Also, reading. I'm reading this book called The Fall of Souls by R.A. Moreau. It is like an Egyptian-inspired romanticy story. I'm really enjoying it. It's so it takes sort of like the Egyptian gods and goddesses and builds a fantasy world that's based in that milieu, I guess. But the story is very interesting, and I'm here for it. I'm enjoying it. I've been in a little bit of a reading desert, so that is really nice. Okay. That was all I had to say. If anyone has any questions who are live, let me know if I can answer them. If my brain is not complete mush. And yeah, I hope to do more of the personal update podcasts. It's just been reorganizing myself after coming back from Greece. Like whenever I go away, because I'm self-employed with my website development business, it's always like a little bit of a digging out of a hole when you get back and just getting back into time management and doing things and getting up early. Although I got up early on vacation because those tours were like, seize the day, carpe the diem. My goals for the coming week, rework the Book of Secrets proposal and also start drafting this short story that is due soon. I really need to get a solid draft so I can have a couple of days away from it, come back, review it before it's due. I think those are good enough goals. And then also continue sort of planning my whole 10K in 10 days challenge. There's things I have to put in place in order to make these ideas a reality. And I'm sure there's more on my to-do list. Incoming cat we have. So that's all for me for this week and for this live recording of the podcast. And I will hopefully talk to you next week. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter and get the show notes in your inbox, go to myimaginaryfriends.net, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, watch the video episodes on YouTube with bonus cats, email me at podcast@lpenelope.com. And I would really appreciate a rating or review for the podcast to help support the show. My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts. Have a good weekend, everybody. And I will hopefully talk to you next week.